Today I'm in London with Ian Price, and it's a great pleasure that he's agreed to speak to me. And he hasn't seen the questions before, so this is going to be an exciting time for him. So Ian, where did we first meet?
I think we first met probably at one of the Celtic Manadoos in Wales for the Christmas party.
Probably we did, yes. Though we met through my husband's work.
Yes, definitely. About 14 years ago, I should say.
Gosh, it might even be longer ago than that. Yeah. You never know. So the next question, because this is an extension of my tea drinking project, is do you drink tea?
Yes.
And what is your favourite sort of tea?
If I'm really honest, English breakfast tea, very boring, very straightforward.
And what would be your favourite cup of tea in the day?
Definitely the first one in the morning.
Definitely. I'm assuming you have milk in that.
Yes.
And it's, yeah, just a good waking you up in the
Definitely.
Morning cup of tea. So the question which I'm asking everybody for the podcast is how they respond to this statement. So the statement is, Christianity in the UK is not dying, but sleeping.
Oh, I think that's really true. I think the way that Christianity's changed, I still believe that the vast majority of people believe in something, and Christianity has moved and changed, and I think more and more people are looking for some different sort of way of worshipping something that they believe in. Absolutely right. And I don't think it's, I definitely agree, it's not dead by any means. I think it's a bit dormant, but you're starting to see some new people coming in with new ideas about how to get the message of Christianity over.
So what sort of examples
have you? We've got a Citadel Faith Church in Swindon. I went along there recently and watching how they enthuse about Christianity rather than be traditional. I think it's actually encouraging people to go along and experience Christianity in a different way.
What was your response to the sermon at the wedding? Did you see the Harry and Meghan's wedding?
Oh, I thought it was stunning. And I think that's because suddenly you saw a different way of getting a message over. And I'm a great believer, and you're lucky enough to know me quite a long time. I can be enthusiastic about anything, and I think society needs to be enthusiastic. And I think what we saw at that wedding was somebody who was so proud to be asked to give a sermon and allowed to do it in the way that he wanted to do was just breathtaking.
So because I've been on sabbatical, I haven't watched the whole wedding yet. I need to sit down and do that at some point. Because I couldn't watch it live, but the response to this sermon, I have never in my lifetime heard a sermon that's been so talked about.
I think the reason for that's probably twofold. One was that gentleman was brilliant at talking. Also, it wasn't expected. So if you think about it from a real traditional way, we expected a very traditional service. Suddenly, something came left field and grabbed the nation. And funny enough, I'd say that's a bit like, unfortunately it sounds a different way, at Di's funeral, when her brother spoke, it was different to what was expected and had a massive impact. And it proves the value of, if you have a word, if you believe in something, what you can say and how you can say it can make a huge difference.
Mm. Now, one of the things that I know that you're really passionate about is the young carers in Swindon.
Yes,
so I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about that and a bit about how you see that transforming people's lives.
I think you know me well. I'm lucky enough to work for a company and I've done better than I anticipated in life. And what you realise, if you're lucky enough to do better than anticipated, there's people that haven't. And if you can do something to help, it's important. I'm lucky enough to have two lovely daughters who are... if I said normal, I mean that in a sort of whatever normal is. I got involved in young carers ages ago, and it just hit a real note with me. And watching young carers who really do make a huge difference to society, that are unpaid, they do it 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, is, for me, really inspiring. And it keeps my feet firmly on the ground as well. And I call it my yin and yang world. I have a yin and yang world, and I have a business world and the charitable world. And young carers take everything in their stride, and they're ace.
So what would be the definition of a young carer?
To me, it's anybody. A young carer to me is anybody under the age of 18 that cares for somebody in that family, be it the sibling, the mum, the dad. My experience is, and it's just observation more than anything else, that an awful lot of young carers, they care for more than one person. It's often their mother's not well, their father's not well, or brother's not well, and they have a huge responsibility. And the way they go about it is with pride, and no, they don't look for sympathy or anything. They're just very clever, and I do mean clever. They know how to organise their lives to look after people. It's stunning.
So what sort of support do you provide for them?
What we try and do as Friends of Young Carers is, being perfectly blunt, getting money in so that they can do respite type of events, be it, you know, it might be having a one-to-one with a care worker at a coffee shop, it might be recently getting a phone for them so that they can keep in contact with their mother, it might be paying for football lessons. It's lots of things we like to do where we can make a significant difference for them, and that's important.
And it's their personal development, isn't it? It's focused on their needs.
Oh, definitely, definitely. One of the things I think I may have mentioned to you once before, I took some time off from work and I went and visited carers. What's really important is each carer is different, each family is different, so it has to be tailored for that individual. And one carer I met, young carer I met, all she really wanted was 10 quid to spend on herself once a month. That's what life's about, and so you can make a huge difference for a little bit of money.
Mm-hmm. So a big result from not a huge amount of money.
Definitely, and because I'm involved very much in the non-profit world, I think sometimes the figures we talk about in the charity world are immense. You know, we paid for somebody to have a phone that costs 150 quid. This is not £150,000. You know, a little amount, and I think society's got to be realised sometimes a little amount can make a huge difference, and I think that's really important to understand for the young carers. And I've watched some of the young carers develop, and they're ace. Watch them go into the adult life, really clever.
And I think one of the things which I think we're realising more when we're in places where we're trying to help people, and particularly people find with food banks and stuff like that, is that intervention at just the right time. It doesn't need to be a big intervention.
No.
So a £30 food parcel for a family at a particular time can make a huge transformational difference.
I'm fanatical about that. I think even with lucky enough to have two daughters, sometimes giving the daughter aged 17, 20 quid so she can go out is worth a fortune. And I think we've got to try and keep it all in perspective. Some of these people who are carers particularly, their lives are not easy. I can't change their lives. I'm very clear about that. As somebody involved in charity, I cannot change a young carer's life. You know, they will be a young carer. What I can do is sometimes come along and make it a little bit easier. Even if for 2 days, one day, whatever, take them out of that environment so they can actually be a normal child rather than a young carer. And that's really important.
Mm. Do you ever see the church involved in helping with these young carers?
Definitely. I think the more... I've become all a bit evangelical, if I'm really honest, wacky-backy, whatever you call it. The more I'm starting getting a little bit older, looking to the next phase of what I want to do, I've started to realise that in most towns, cities, there's so many charities, but they're not connected. Mm-hmm. So we're all sort of trying to do good, but actually we'd probably better to do good if we actually started talking to each other to say, you know, I've been involved in some Alzheimer's work, and you find out how many people are involved in Alzheimer's. It's just amazing. So I think what you've got is, so for instance, the Citadel Church in Swindon have been brilliant, and they've put on some great events for the Alzheimer's patients, and I went along there. Watching them was just lovely, and I think that's where I can see churches in the future becoming far more it's community-based than ever before, but understanding that things aren't normal. You know, I don't know what a normal life is. I don't think any of us really do. So we had to. I think that's where churches can actually adapt to understand that, you know, it's not the husband, wife and two kids scenario anymore. It's very rare. And in fairness, I've just been speaking to someone today. I've just celebrated our 30th wedding anniversary, which is quite an amazing feat. And it is absolutely amazing, but that's not normal.
I think at the moment, Christian churches in the UK are getting back into social action in a way that maybe they were doing more locally, but in a bigger way now. So churches provide the largest amount of debt advice,
yes,
and toddler groups in the UK.
I think that's really important. One of the things, part of my other role that I do, is I was talking to something about business in the community, and I think one of the things they were talking about, say, the ageing population is social interaction. And I can genuinely see that social interaction, getting churches involved in that in a different way, would be absolutely brilliant. I've got a 94-year-old mother who's alive and well, bless her cotton socks, doing remarkably well. Her big thing is social interaction. And I think that's where the churches can look at how do they help the communities, young and old. And I'm a fanatical fan that the old people should be talking to the young people should talk to the old people. It's actually, it works really well. There's a brilliant program on. I saw about the kids going into the old people's homes. I absolutely love that because it made me really realise how society, generations can help each other.
So, the Samaritans.
Mm-hmm.
How long? Are you still involved with the Samaritans?
No, I was a Samaritan on the phone for 2 years, and then I was involved in running the actual organisation as chairman of the Samaritans Committee.
So they are another small intervention, a really important part of somebody's life.
Definitely. I think the only thing I'd say, and this is basically an observation more than ever, I'm still in touch with some people from Samaritans organisations, I'm still close to them. They would say now they're probably more involved in mental illness than ever before. Mm-hmm. And one of the guys was telling me they reckon between 75 to 85% of the calls they've received recently have been dealing with people with mental illness. So it's rife within society. It's wrong words to use, but actually I think mental illness is actually one of the biggest issues we've got as a society. And that, believe it or not, let's go back to that, goes from young right the way through to old. So I think understanding mental illness and actually being able to talk about it, a bit like we are tonight in a funny sort of way, is rather ironic. So I think for me, mental illness is really, really important. And the Samaritans have really started to fill a gap whereby previously there was different ways of doing it. There's no outlet. And I can remember being on the phone. The thing that taught me the most about society and people is what you think is minor is major to somebody. And perhaps the best way I can do it is give you a great example. I was on the phone at Christmas and a lady phoned me up who was really suicidal because she was £60 in debt. Not 6,000, not 600, £60 in debt, and she was suicidal. That was a real eye-opener to me.
And I guess it's that being at that crisis moment for people and understanding what it's a crisis.
Yes.
For some is not a crisis.
Absolutely. In reality, what I wanted to do was, if you drive down to 6 Curtis Street, which happens to be the Samaritan's office in Swindon, you ask for EN57, which was my code, I will give you 60 quid, but we couldn't do that.
Mm.
Yet the solution to a problem, to me, was very minor, but to her was major. And that's really understanding. Tommy taught me a great idea about a beach ball. We can look at a beach ball, it's a beach ball, but actually it's different colours. And I think you've got to be very careful that you don't think, oh, it's only 60 quid, but for somebody who's got no money, 60 quid is like £60,000 to somebody else. It's a real important letter that society has to learn.
The last question, you'll be pleased to know, Ian, it's
right.
The last question, is, and this is the one that people really struggle with, is what's your favourite thing beginning with T?
Talking.
Now, that's really interesting. You're the second person who said that, so I'm going to ask why you've said it.
Because I think if you talk and listen, we could all learn a lot from other people. So when I became a Samaritan, you know me quite well from my other world. I'm reasonably well paid for being presenting. I couldn't talk, I had to listen. So talking gets people to give you the opportunity to listen, to understand what their issues are. So without talking, I think society would be a bad place. And I generally think at the minute we don't do enough. And I'll give you a great example. I went out with my youngest daughter for dinner recently in a lovely little tapas bar in Old Town. We had a great chat about life and that. I looked around the table, there was lots of couples out for the first time and they were on their phones. They weren't talking. So if we're not careful, one of the skills we've had is disappearing, will be a real detriment to society.
One of the things that people are trying to teach in the foundation stage of education is talking and listening.
Yes.
And how you do that. And one of the schools over the years that I've been ordained that I've been involved with has had a real issue with children coming in who can't talk and
yes.
listen. And that's something which they need. You see, these are children who are 3 and 4.
Yes.
And that is where they should be learning it, and I can see that some aren't.
Absolutely right. I'm very lucky enough, as you know, to have a daughter who's a doctor. And watching her learn the skills of talking and listening is brilliant. She gave me a lovely example yesterday. She took three, she's working in the geriatrics ward, where unfortunately a lot of people have Alzheimer's. Three of the lovely ladies said to her, it'd be really nice to go and see the sun today, so she took them outside. So she talked to them, listened to them, and made a huge difference to their life. And I think we underestimate the power of talking. And today, it's all emails, text messages and that, but talking to me is really important in life.
Well, that's great. And they're the questions, Ian. So thank you so much.
You're
for
welcome.
Talking to me today.
You're welcome.